In this week, a hat-trick from Andy Sayre earned the Dons a 3-1 win over Newcastle United, but it was off-the-field events at Plough Lane that took the headlines. Several hundred fans stayed behind after the final whistle to show their opposition to the possibility of the club merging with Crystal Palace. We are dealing with reality, not we are dealing with the realities, not fairy tales, owner Salmon said in the week that followed. I will not allow those who do not know the financial facts to kill the club with their emotions. We're still being very emotional. We're moving up the leagues. We're the same old Wombles. We're back.
Might not be life or death, my friend, but to me, it's more important than that.
Welcome to Same Old Wombles podcast for the fans. By the official Same Old Wombles podcast crew. Today, I'm
That's
joined...
the only official thing we are.
That's right. I'm joined by my friend, Niall Cooper. Hello, Niall.
Hello, Matthew.
I'm joined by producer Adam Proctor. Hello, Adam.
Good evening.
And our football expert and guru, and I'm guessing one of the reasons why we're so official, Mr. Mark Lewis. Hello.
Nothing but unofficial me. The only official thing is I'm officially hungry. So my apologies for slapping my dinner down during the recording of tonight's podcast.
And we record late as well, chaps. We should all be eating beforehand. But Adam, you've got a vegetarian lasagna in the oven waiting for you.
No, it's even worse than that. It's a vegan lasagna, so there isn't even any cheese involved. It's waiting for me in the oven.
What?
Boring.
What can that be? What is that? It's got to be. I don't even know how that works. It's just lettuce. Anyhow, but in between. No,
I don't know, Matt. I don't know. I can't contemplate it. The idea of I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah.
Adam, anyhow, all respect to you if you're vegan. All respect for that.
Major respect.
I'm not.
No,
I'm not.
Anyhow, chaps.
I'm eating meatballs, so there.
You see, listener, how the diversity and wokeness falls apart quite quickly
diversity
when I'm
and
on the podcast.
What kind of a phrase is that?
Can we
talk about football?
We can totally talk about football. Dear me, yeah. Don't try and claim the diversity, Adam. We've had a couple of matches between after the last podcast, which was very nice and lovely talking to our ex-youth goalkeeper, Steve Mumford. But we've drawn a couple of away games. Now, the theory has always been win your home games, draw your away games, and that's all right. But is that going to be good enough? I mean, are we too reliant on defence? Is that where we're... It seems like JJ is all about defence, you know, which is great. And we've kept loads of clean sheets up until Saturday's draw with Colchester. But Mark, I'm thinking, are we now too defensive?
I guess by definition, keeping semi-clean sheets, yes, we are. The interesting thing is that the only other team that can really kind of compare to us is Burnley, whose defensive record across the EFL is unsurpassed in terms of hours and hours and hours, but it's been without them conceding a goal. Our issue seems to be without creativity from Brown, who can be easily kicked out of a game like Crew tried it, or marked out of a game as other people have tried, or Colchester basically provided a lack of grass, which by the sound of it didn't really help either. Where are the goals coming from? Unfortunately, in very practical terms, Mate Stevens has scored a few recently and scored a couple of important penalties, but actually Boogle's stuff's dried up. Kelly's only got a couple. You've got to spread the goals around the team. The successful teams get goals from everywhere, from random left backs, as Kimball used to do now and again, or centre backs and so on, popping up from free kicks. We're not doing
that. Stop. Alan Kimball scored loads of goals for us. What planet are you on, Mr. Lewis? Stop that. Like, I know you're supposed to be guru and stuff. But now, just okay, just go through. Sorry, Matt. Well, Nathan, talk about your best five Alan Kimball goals. Go on.
Yeah.
Top five Alan Kimball goals. Because I reckon,
as I said, I realised like, that was wrong. Although Alan Kimball did score against Real Madrid in a friendly we played that was only featured on some documentary programme on something like whatever the sport midweek programme they used to do on ITV.
It doesn't take us long to get sidetracked. It doesn't take us long to get sidetracked and fly back to the 80s. Because I'm pretty sure that all of a sudden we're going to be naming who was the which left-back scored the most goals. Elkins, Phelan, Winterburn.
Phelan.
Elkins scored a wonderful one against Liverpool, deflected about four times to send someone like David James the wrong way.
And I remember Winterburn's...
Hang on, where did Cunningham
right
play
back.
This?
Right.
I'd like to know who was at that game that Matt referenced in the start there. Andy Sayers' hat trick and the sitting. I definitely remember the sitting.
I definitely remember the sitting. But do you know what? I'm trying to, because I remember Paul Miller hat trick. And
that was Peter Shilton.
Yeah, I don't remember. I'm
was
trying
it Derby? Derby.
It was
Derby,
wasn't it?
Derby.
Yeah,
4-0.
No, Villa. He scored a hat trick against Villa. I'm sure Miller scored a hat trick against Villa. Miller, didn't he? You're saying Derby. I thought he was Villa. Anyhow, and he played. He used to be quite good for a period of time, and then he got injured. And then I felt sorry for Paul Miller. Anyhow, the point is, we've drawn these couple of games, and it feels like, you know, we haven't got people coming back.
Stop.
Oh, fuck's sake!
Stop right.
Oh,
Paul
God,
Miller.
Bennett.
Paul Miller, right? I've got a lot of time for Paul Miller because I thought he was great. And then for those of you who are of a certain vintage, which is basically us lot, and that's it, right. We gave Paul Miller a bit of stick and I feel really, really guilty about it because I did speak to him as one of the people that I was trying to get hold for the book. And he has not got an awful lot of love for Wimbledon because of how we treated Paul Miller. So just putting it out there to all of you, those out there, this is me kind of going... I'm sorry, Paul Miller, and I speak on behalf of most Wimbledon fans. You were a very good player, and I apologise for giving you jip. Not that I don't think I did give you jip. I might have done for you getting slightly off the ball after you broke your leg.
Apologise to Paul Miller for the fact that Niall giving him some type of belated credit is going to do absolutely nothing for his street cred.
I can see where this evening's taking us. That's why we usually have special guests on. It keeps us a bit grounded. If it's Niall, he seems to be on one today. We were going to talk football governance later on, but I don't even know if we've got enough time. Adam, how much bleeping do we need to do already?
Pretty much all of it.
Pretty much. Let's start from here. Anyhow, the point is we've drawn these last couple of games, and because obviously we've only really got two. Midfielders, haven't we? Because we kind of play with a three up front. We've kind of played with a three, and then we've got two, and one of them is usually going to sit. So it's, you know, when the ball goes wide, which is invariably what we do, we're crossing the ball in. Who's getting on the end of it? They're going to have loads of defenders back. So it's just it's tricky for us scoring goals. And I'm not saying we're playing badly. You know, I think Nerval's been playing brilliantly, but just feels like. You know, we need to start being a bit braver. And certainly, you know, great that we took a 1-0 lead. And I know, in actual fact, the weird thing was we went one up against Colchester. So I thought we were going to see the game out because that's usually what we do.
I think we have fallen into the trap. We found a way to play when the likes of Bugle and Reeves and Lewis were injured. And we were like making do and matching and mending in terms of whoever was going to play in midfield. And so we fell into the 3-4-3 idea because it meant that we had Ippolite injured, because we had Maycock injured, and both of those two are still unfortunately unavailable. We didn't know what to do and we didn't have any other resources and we didn't want to throw people like Harry Sibbel in, which I completely understand. Having done that, we haven't gone back to playing three in midfield. And regularly...
Yep.
Teams are outnumbering us. Bradford, for example, have reacted to losing Andy Cook, their top scorer, by packing their midfield. They played with two number 10s against us and fortunately didn't left their shooting boots at home, and therefore we got away with a 1-0 win. But the reality is, if you put lots of good midfield players in there who can play good football, as Crewe can, as Bradford can, then these teams will overcome most people at League Two level. Even poorer teams like an Accrington or like a Colchester, aren't doing too badly, to be fair. They got some of the best defensive records behind us, actually, in the league. But these guys can overpower us in midfield. And I suspect Bromley will come and try and do exactly the same thing. And it's not like Bromley are going to be anything except physical. And I worry if we don't put an extra body in midfield in that kind of game, we're not going to have enough of the ball. I'm not saying drop Marcus Brown at all, but it doesn't really matter if you have one of the top goal scorers in the league in Matt Stevens, if he has no possession and no chance to play.
And so, Mark, can we drop Brown back into midfield?
He doesn't like that position, though, does he?
I think there's a difference between playing 3-4-3 and playing 3-5-2.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
We haven't played 3-5-2 since about mid-November.
We were doing really well. Then we got those injuries. So maybe we need to be looking. I mean, and I'm interested because we have got, and God knows how we get these people back in. But how do you get Maycock and Hippolyte back into that squad? Because they were both brilliant at the start of the season. I mean, you weren't dropping Maycock. I wouldn't have thought.
No,
Maycock was over Smith.
We've forgotten now, with Maycock being missing for so long, and now that the winning run hasn't been quite so consistent. I mean, it's 12 unbeaten, and you can't sniff at 12 unbeaten because that's the record that we've had in the league, apparently. But 12 unbeaten is 6 wins and 6 draws, which, considering there is a little bit of consistency from the likes of Walsall and Bradford, if not from too many other teams, considering that, we need to be eking out games like Colchester. We need to be going to somewhere like Morecambe next week and going on the front foot from the start, because you know if you're 2-0 up after half an hour against a team that are in the bottom three, they will capitulate and you should win that game relatively easily. But if you sit back on the back foot, you're not going to get anywhere. And I fear that, you know, Hippolyte and Maycock and Ball, they're doing some training drills. I saw them doing training drills before the last home game, but they're probably still 2 or 3 weeks away at best.
Do you think so? Well, I'm interested. I'm just interested because I think JJ was talking this week about, you know, getting some more time into those players. So whether there's going to be a sort of like a friendly and it involves, you know, Maycock, Hippolyte, Osman, you know, Ward, Furlong, players that haven't been getting that much time. Your favourite, Adam Piggott. So maybe it's about a friendly getting legs into those players, because I think it would be interesting if we did start going back to that system, because it feels like when we get the ball wide and we're knocking the ball in, there aren't that many options in the box. Even though in theory there should be four, shouldn't there? Because if Nerfield's dropping the ball over, Tilly would come in, Stevens, Bugle and Brown. But then they've got, I don't know, everyone seems to be behind the ball. So it just seems to be tighter and tighter. Also, can I just check with you guys on the Morecambe game? Because I know JJ made quite a big thing of this, of the going up to Accrington. They stayed the night over. They played the game, then they stayed the night over, which I think is great. But my sense is travelling on the day, even if it's an evening kickoff, is exhausting.
Yeah.
Travelling just is exhausting. Going a long way travelling is exhausting. So should there not be, you know, for the Morecambe game, should we not be staying up the night before and the night after the match?
Well, I think we should.
I think it makes sense. It makes sense. It does make sense. I mean, the only issue that is that you're still quite close to Blackpool, and there's a risk that the players might think Blackpool's interesting. No, seriously, I think we definitely should. What was interesting is when I was on the board and we were looking at recruiting managers, and this is relevant, by the way, it was strongly suggested that you should look at recruiting young managers, because what people forget is the impact of travel it has on anyone. So you actually don't have that. It mentally exhausts managers, older managers, if they have to travel a lot. And obviously there's the same consequence for anybody if they're traveling all the time. So I think having that relative ability to have proper rest is really important. So I would definitely
I
have
guess
that.
my question is, do you think it's just because we are like, there's no way I travel, do something energetic, and and not have an extra, because I've done a couple of things recently where I'm like, okay, I need an extra day. I'm like, okay, I'll travel, but then I want to be the whole day there, followed by another night over and travel. I wonder if it's just us.
I think these are really small things, Adam, but it's those small little bits that you need when we're in where we are in the league. So if it means it's going to give us that little bit of extra rest and stuff for our players, then I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing. I think it's probably a very positive thing for us to do that.
No, I agree. I agree.
And I'll be honest, I spoke to some.
I think it's got to come down to
That's what I was
expense
going to say. Is
because
how much?
I'm getting it that's all it comes down to, because obviously it's expensive. Expensive to stay another night at a place that's going to add on, God knows how many people go up
Stop,
there.
Matty. Matty, stop. Stop for a minute. Stop for a minute, right? But I've seen those Lenny Henry adverts, right? Premier Inns, they're like super comfortable beds. You get a really nice
Okay,
rested sleep.
this bit can go,
That's the
Adam.
way to
This
go.
bit, this is fine. You're fine to beep over this bit, yeah.
So I mean, I think it's probably an expense thing. If games got changed to a Tuesday night and we had to book hotels, etc., late, when you're talking like 30 odd people or whatever, that's going to rack up, isn't it? If you're booking it like late, etc.
Well, it's going to add on. Let's add on another 3 to 5K, I'd have thought.
Easy.
Yeah.
So
So,
maybe we should
yeah.
get like an upgraded coach
But it's a
with
shame.
like
But it's a
just
shame.
like beds in the top of the coach, so they just travel sleeping. We just park outside the ground, sleep there.
Yeah, we can beat this beat out too. Oh, no, that's you speaking, Adam. Sorry. Anyhow, I think we've covered. I think we've got that. It feels like we need to go back. Hopefully, I mean, if we can mix it up, because people are getting used to how we're playing. So I think it's a good thing if we can mix it up. If we can go from, 3-4-3 back to 3-5-2, I think it would be useful if we could mix it up. And also, again, interesting that JJ was talking about having this big squad that we can, mix and match players about. And yet we played virtually the same starting lineup for the last three games, which is. And I thought he would change it for Accrington, but again, he
I mean, he
went
might
with
change
it.
it for Tuesday again. I think if there was one midweek game a few weeks back, he made four changes
Yeah.
and then four changes back again. The
Yeah.
reality you've got, unfortunately, is there are one or two players who are not irreplaceable, but certainly we don't really have the same kind of player to make the same kind of impact in the team. And we played without them this season on occasion, so we haven't played particularly well. However, Omar's place in the team is probably not to be questioned, except for the fact he's a striker. And I haven't got the stats to hand, but I'm fearing that he scored fewer than 5 goals this season.
Yeah, I think
And
it's
if any
three.
striker, generally speaking, in any team had contributed that lower goal tally, you'd be questioning why on earth he's in the team. The reality is, we all know that what he brings to the team with his get up and go, with his tackling and so on and so forth, is worth far more than
Yeah, ignore
four or
those.
five goals.
Yeah, ignore just the score stats.
I know, that's what I just said. It's worth far
Yeah.
more than just the stats. But the reality is, if he's not scoring goals, if you add up Bugle and Kelly and Piggott, you probably get to fewer than 10 goals.
Yeah.
I was thinking that maybe if Stephen's got 20 and the others got 10 each, then we'll be laughing. But I think at this rate, Stevens will get 20, but the others might not get many more than 15 between them.
Yeah. And
And that's
what
what makes the
happens? What
difference
happens?
between playoffs and automatics, I would say.
Oh, I don't want to do the playoffs.
I know, but
Oh.
we have to look at it objectively.
Yeah, I think the thought in Adam's mind, he just can't compute the thought that you would ever drop Omar as it. You
No,
don't.
because he does
No,
so much.
exactly.
Like off the, he does so much off the ball, on the ball. It's not, goals are important, of course, but you can win a game 1-0, and so, and
That is very true, Adam. Never was a more true thing said. You can win a game 1-0. That is very true. That is very true. I think we should. That's what the title of this pod will be.
hey, before we move on to the next section, I've just come up with a wicked idea, right? No, no, right. So van on. Life.
What is up with you and Niall?
Van life stuff on YouTube is like skyrocketing, right? So if we like basically bought loads of like camper vans and put our players in there doing like van life YouTubes on the way to matches, they could stay for as many nights as they want. We'd make a bomb in sponsorship just by van life in our all of our players. They'd love it. Bunking up in a little van, a VW camper. This is going to save us loads of money and make us loads of money. I've just solved our away travel problems.
They'd love it. Have you met the average League Two footballer?
I just...
you might love it, Mr. Vegan Lasagna Man.
What has happened, Adam? What is going on?
I'm coming up with plans.
You're coming up. You need to eat, mate. That's what it is. Always eat before the podcast. Adam, I'm going to check on you before. Make sure you've had some food before you come on here with your van. It's going. What is wrong with you?
I just solved our hotel issues instantly.
By them staying in at VW Volkswagen vans?
Matt, wait a minute. Wait a minute, Matty. Wait a minute, Matt. To our listener out there who has obviously owns a fleet of VW camper vans, if you can donate them to the club, that would be really welcome. So that's what we're doing. Today, we are launching a campaign. Anyone with a spare VW camper van, please donate them now to the club because it will solve the club millions of pounds in years to come. According to Adam, I've never got elected onto the board, Proctor.
And that's why.
That's a low blow.
The board came up with the PLC board last meeting. The VW camper van for away travel was not even on the agenda. I can't imagine why.
Low blows.
Dear. This is kind of. I'm lining up guests from now on.
To be fair, Adam, you did miss it out on your manifesto, so that could have been a turning point.
Talking of manifestos of the DTB, see how I segue here. Last night, there was a meet the board, and this was meeting the PLC board. And it was in person, so people were able to come along there. And it was also streamed as well. And I'm sure some people will say, oh, there wasn't many people in the space. It was a Monday night. It was wet and horrible. And it was also streamed. And I believe there was a few people watching it. I've certainly watched it. And I watched it after it was on. And I thought it went really well. It was a really good meeting.
No, but Matthew, I think before you go into this, what's really important is there was loads of people online. There was people in the room, etc. But I think based on every single meeting that we have, I now need you to pull up a slide deck and explain the difference between the PLC board and the Don's Trust board. Because for whatever reason, no one still understands this. So it seems that at the beginning of every meeting, there needs to be an explanation about the difference between the two.
Yeah. Well, there was. They at the beginning they had to do that explanation. So it's like, you know, the DTB are the people that we elect, and then the PLC look after the football side of it. And we have, I think it's three members of the DTB always have to sit on the PLC, and they kind of have a veto on certain things. What I thought was quite interesting is they showed up a list of the things that go to the members, so what the members can vote on and what the DTB have got to say on. So things like the change of badge, the change of kit colour, change of name, change of location, all that sort of stuff would have to go to the fans. We would be voting on that. But ground share is not decided by membership. That is decided by the DTB. And I'm assuming that there's a reason for that, which is around, it's associated with finances as well. There could be all sorts of things. But I thought that was quite interesting. Out of all the things that had to be voted by the members, had to go to membership, and those that the DTB board could actually agree on. But yes. And then also have experts. You have experts on the PLC as well, which is great. And then they're kind of like, I think, basically, Niall, you'll probably be able to comment on this, but it feels like there are people that potentially, because of the number of shares they have, give them a place on the PLC.
Nope.
Right. So, I don't know. Mark says what it was. Right. So it was being debated about whether you got, if you had 10%. Then Mark's like more up to date because like this was all a hot topic when I was on the board, but Mark was on after me, so I'd go with Mark on this. We were discussing 10% would have got you a place, which I voted against. But I don't know what happened afterwards with Mark, whether anything else, where that came up again, were you on board?
No, the simple answer is no. And no one's come on externally, with the exception of Nick Robinson recently, anyway. And I don't know for sure because that happened before I was on board, but I don't think he actually specifically asked for a place on the board.
So Mark, just.
No. He said that in the meeting. There was a, when they talked about the fact he put in all the shares and then was asked by the Don's Trust board to join the PLC board. So no, as far as I understand, you can't get a place on the PLC board unless you've been approved by the Don's Trust board. And if you are a shady character, the Don's Trust board may also want to get further membership, consensus on that. So yeah.
Well,
So.
there's a fit and proper persons test, which anyone who is on the DCB or wants to be on the PLC has to pass. And if they don't, then they can't be on the board.
Okay. Mark's now taking his apron off. He's ready for business. Mark, how do you get on the PLC?
Well, they've invited various non-exec directors or NEDs in recent times. Dan Johnson's one of those. A lady called Michelle Gull was one of those, but then she took a position at another football club in the last 12 months and therefore had to resign. She was covering the diversity side of things, so I believe they are still looking to get somebody else in. They're also at the same time looking to have an actual appointed head of the PLC, which has been ongoing since about October, and there have been various interviews. I don't quite know why it's ongoing still. I'm not as close, obviously, not close to it at all anymore. But my understanding was basically it was down to two candidates at the end of last year, and it's now the end of February, so quite what's happened in those 2 months, not quite sure. But that's that.
So basically, we bring people on the board who we feel can make a positive difference to the our footballing business.
Yeah, and I believe we have actually. In fact, I know we did this because he was on LinkedIn as a business social media platform, where they were inviting people to apply for that role as a non-exec director. And there were a couple of people I know who are Wimbledon fans who I'm connected with on LinkedIn, and I literally sent them a quick message on it. So whether or not they want to be involved, or they are involved, or they've applied to be involved, or they have no interest in it, I don't know specifically. I haven't seen them at games recently. I'm sure they've been at games recently, but I haven't seen them at games recently to be able to ask them. But
Yeah.
yes, I mean, I know that we're well aware the Don's Trust board in general, before my time, during my time, and probably now as well, is well aware, as you can see from the still image of the PLC board last night, that unfortunately the board does not reflect the fan base. The board is full of white men of a certain age, with the exception of Michelle, who does a great job. But actually, Michelle's not on the board. Michelle is the treasurer. And therefore, they want more diversity. They need more diversity. That needs to be appropriate to the fan base overall. And I think if you're a white man in his 50s, as all of us are,
Yeah.
then you're going to struggle to necessarily appropriately represent the interests of the diverse fan base and the diverse population of Wimbledon and Merton and Wandsworth that we want to be able to engage with and appeal to.
Yeah. No, I agree. And also, there was an awful lot of jeans on display. Everyone was in jeans. There was a lot of jeans. I just felt there could be some cords or, a suit or something in there, but there's a lot of jeans. Everyone was in jeans. I
Were there
thought
any
that also
blazers
needs
and
to
jeans
change.
in that really bad M&S way?
No, I don't want, there wasn't blade, it was a lot of shirts or jumpers, but jeans, predominantly jeans. Anyhow, I kind of made a few pointers from it that I thought were quite interesting, and we can go back and have a chat of these. But if I just go through this kind of little list I pulled together, one thing I was interested in is that obviously we make a loss each year, but they've kind of recently been underwritten by player sales. And it was interesting that 35% of transfer income has been coming to us in the last season. So 35% of all the transfer income in League Two has come to us. It feels like the Al Hamady sale was really pivotal in giving us a bit of a budget and helping us with our finances.
I think the size of the Al Hamady sale as opposed to just the Al Hamady sale.
We're owed 400K from a company that's went into liquidation, and I think we're looking at how we can get that money. Interesting to know that season tickets will be digital by default on your phone from next season. Plastic cards are available if people want them.
Can I just pick up on that point?
Yes, sure.
And I'm interested in what everyone's opinions of this are.
Yeah.
Because to me, personally, I think that's another... I understand why it's being made, and a lot of people will say, just get with the times. And I'm completely happy with all those things and use apps and everything else all the time. But I think, personally, it's a step away from something that a number of supporters of a certain age would be comfortable with. It's exactly the same as the not accepting cash for programs, which at the time I had a discussion with Danny Macklin about personally. And I understand why it's happening, and I understand the simplicity of it and the how it'll make ticket exchange that much more straightforward, but it will disenfranchise some people. It will make some people feel uncomfortable about things. I don't know whether that's the type of thing that it would have been sensible to take some type of temperature survey on. But again, it's an operational thing, so that's not the type of thing Don's Toss would get involved with, as far as I'm aware. But it doesn't sit completely comfortably with me on a completely personal level.
It's interesting, because I don't mind it so much. My thing is making sure my phone is charged, because I could just see that being a problem. But Adam, I thought this might be something that appealed to you.
So what appeals to me is the ability to resell tickets easier and to be able to transfer tickets to friends, relatives or whatever who can go on your behalf. And all of those functions can be done by logging into a website on a computer using an internet browser, technically, right? It doesn't require an app to do any of the functionality that has been described. So that's the first thing is to understand is that in theory, because I don't know what the system is or anything like that, but if you want the functionality to be able to easier resell and transfer tickets to other friends and family, you can do that by using the internet through a web browser. That doesn't require an app and it doesn't require a phone. It shouldn't do. And that's one thing to be aware of. Anyone that says it requires a phone or an app is not being truthful with the requirements of what that kind of system should be able to do. So there's that is the first point. I think having tickets on your app to be able to scan through, whether that's train turnstiles, etc., is useful. But I have moved a number of those things to smart cards or my contactless cards so that I don't have to think about my phone being charged to be able to make sure that I can get in and out of exit and entry barriers. And, when you're using a train, there's often a plug you can plug your phone into. But if you're at a match and your phone is running out, that might cause some problems. But obviously, it's only on entry. So I think a lot of fans will be quite happy to have the tickets on their app as long as they integrate with their wallet functionality on their phones. And I'm hoping that the option to have a plastic card doesn't limit any of the functionality that might be on the app or the web, and that you could have both if you'd like to, so that you could have a card in your wallet just because you think, well, I just want to tap in. I know how to use the app. I know how to use the website. So I would like to hear a bit more details, but I think the reasoning behind all of it, which is that we have renegotiated a deal with the ticket people, and in that renegotiation, we've been given extra functionality, which is make it easier for people to resell and make it easier for people to transfer their tickets. And I think that will make a massive saving in terms of time and energy from a lot of people working in the ticket office, which I think would be a fantastic thing. And if you want to expand your fan base from 8,000 to 20,000, etc., then we need to not rely on kind of individuals replying to emails and creating PDFs and things for us. So that makes a lot of sense to me. But I would finally reiterate that the functionality that we've talked about should not and doesn't need to rely on something having a phone and an app. That would be slightly annoying and unnecessary technically.
But you're right. I mean, it does save that sort of functionality. I guess my big thing is that I would like to see some sort of flyering campaign in the weeks leading up to this change so that people understand it, because I think there's a lot of fans who don't necessarily read the websites, and some fans don't even listen to this podcast, so they're not going to get information from that. So I think there needs to be a lot more information about it, and it's not just in the program because a lot of people aren't buying the program. So there
Yeah,
needs to be a lot more
to be fair,
information.
yeah, it does. And last thing to say on that is like, you know, this was sort of rumbling around, and my dad heard about it and said, "Oh, great, it'll be easier for me to transfer my ticket so that when he can't come and we can do it, you know." And he would totally is up for that, right? But I know what he won't be up for is an electronic ticket on his phone to scan in the turnstiles.
Which is exactly what it's
So,
going to be.
yeah, that's.
yeah. So he ha so it's like. I'm saying there should, I don't know what the score is, but there should be the option that he can request a plastic
Yep,
card,
he can.
but that shouldn't limit his funk, his ability to have the funk, new functionality of being, having easier access to transferring or reselling tickets.
Yeah, I mean, I think you make a couple of sensible points, Adam. Number one, obviously, we have to factor in growing a fan base, and I'm sure that they're naturally enough going for the boomer vote, or whatever the terminology is. In other words, the fan of a certain age, of children of a certain age, and so on, disposable income, and et cetera. I'd be interested to see if there's any demographics on what the uptakes of season tickets are from people who had season tickets in the last couple of years at Kings Meadow, whether or not there's that relatively consistent, or whether or not, you know, the 4,500 season tickets we have now is, I don't know, for sake of argument, 2,500 Kings Meadow and 2,000 new, because naturally enough you need to replace your season ticket base because people move on, people die out, people just for whatever reason don't go to footballs as much as they used to. You know, children grow up and become teenagers and then get jobs at university elsewhere around Britain, for example. But I'm still a little concerned that, you know, the fans themselves were the ones fundamentally, we're part of that group, obviously, that put their hands in their pockets, continue to put their hands in their pockets, and continue to be asked by the club, obviously, to put their hands in the pockets again, to be able to support all the ventures. And we don't disagree with any of that because we're fans of the club, and that's what we want to be, and that's what we should stay, full stop. And therefore, you need to also consider all the different ideas and feelings and opinions of fans, as opposed to just saying, oh, it's the 21st century, get with the program.
Yeah, I mean, I think I like the fact they have offered the plastic card as an option. I think that is a good thing. It would be interesting to know if you have the plastic card, you've still got the app and you can have that functionality. And in actual fact, it'd be interesting to know if you can have the plastic card and the seat, so you can use one or t'other, if you like. That would be an interesting thing. The other thing I know with season tickets is that they are introducing a new a band, which I think is 18 to 21. Is that right, or is it 60? They're
No,
introducing
it's
the
18 to 21. Yeah, it's to bridge the gap between basically teenagers and the adult price, because that is a considerable thing. You know, I'm literally in the situation as of next season where two relatively cheap season tickets that we would have had, we're considering do we actually renew either of them if both of our teenagers are away at uni? And obviously, if the prices were considerably higher, then that would be a disincentive to do so.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess you put that option forward, Mark.
I had nothing to do with it. I'm glad to see it and happy to see it. I haven't seen the actual details. I think that is a sensible thing.
No, it is a very
This
sensible
is
thing.
a it, yeah. I was going to say this is a really good thing because obviously, yeah. In the last season, my daughter's season ticket is now an adult ticket, and we're going to continue paying for it. But because of work commitments, she hasn't been able to make lots of the games this season. And I was like, okay, what are we going to do next season? Because we aren't getting any value for money in that sense. And but if we get a different type of ticket, an easier way to transfer, then that solves all those problems for me. Because it's like, okay, if I can easily send you guys an over 18 ticket, or that we get a discount so we don't have to worry about it, and there's an easy way to switch it from being the 18 to 21 ticket to the adult ticket, you know, that makes a big difference to me.
That was the one bit of the presentation last night I managed to catch. And if I've got my facts right, it was stating that it's going to be a 40% discount on the adult price. Now, at the moment, it's considerably lower than that. And there's a separate argument, which I suspect it is the type of thing that the Dinosaur Sports should get involved with, which is generally what the season ticket prices are going to be anyway. And again, we're going to be in that situation where we have to put season ticket prices for renewal on sale, I would say, in the next month or so, long before we're going to know whether we're playing League Two or League One football. But naturally enough, the club, from a cash flow point of view, like every club, this is not unique to AFC Wimbledon, needs the money from the season ticket renewals through May, June, July, over the summer period, to obviously keep the wolf from the door, so to speak.
My understanding is I think they're going on sale in March. So that's the thing. And they're also doing 5- and 10-year season tickets. But I don't think you can pay for them incrementally. I think you have to pay, they get all paid up front, because obviously they want the money in advance, which I completely get. And the other things I was looking at that I sort of like pulled out of the meeting from last night was there's a retail space right next to the entrance to the main stand, which is very large and has a sort of access at the back, quite a large access at the back, which could, you know, and could be available onto the fan zone. And we'd be looking at that, but it's expensive. And I think it was something around about £1 million a year to rent it. And then you'd have to do it out, which would be another 700K to actually do it out. So it's a huge amount of money. So there is talk about working with the council or a partner on that space and potentially doing a joint project with it, in the hope that over a period of time, we could then take on that lease. And one suggestion, and I have to say, I love this. One suggestion is that space could become a library. And, you know, Merton, I think, are looking at the idea of that becoming a library. And I think libraries are amazing spaces. They're amazing spaces. It's not just, I mean, like, people still think libraries as books, but I've been to Wimbledon Library a few times, and it's packed. Well, I've got in there in the weeks and after, especially after school, it's packed with kids. They're in there studying. There's lots of other resources that people use, that people getting on the internet. And you have to bear in mind that not everyone can afford to have a personal computer. And there are a lot of places around us where, you know, libraries are a godsend. They genuinely are, for people studying. They are really, really useful places, especially if you're in a small flat and it's crowded, to be able to get out and to go to somewhere where they do actually have decent Wi-Fi, and they do have, and they're warm, and there are places that you can be. And the fact that it would be on our doorstep, but we could be connected with that, with our local community, I think would be an amazing thing.
Dear listener, just in case you've never realised, this is actually a football podcast. But also in case you didn't, Matt Cooper, the host of our wonderful Samuel Wombles podcast, is, of course, somebody who works in a very worthwhile role in the arts community in Greater London. Hence his devout support of the idea of a library. The reality is that has been something, which obviously I was a little aware of, that's been knocking around with the council for some time. Galliard are trying to sell it to the club, have been for some time, charging a large amount of money, which, because we're getting sensible advice and have lots of connections in the community in property, we are not prepared to pay, because we're not stupid.
Yep.
And as a result of that, we're not going to hoik things up to the and pay the prices that Galliard are after. They also don't appear to be able to sell it to anyone else. So you'd think there's some kind of sensible compromise, but that's just me using common sense, which I'm sure doesn't actually exist in business very often.
No, unfortunately, it doesn't.
I think the issue we have is that people just can't understand the word library, and what is termed now in lots of places is a social learning space, and so it's a space where people can come and learn, you know, and enjoy and be social, etc. So yeah, the term library might sound old fashioned, but if you say social learning environment.
Oh, that does the trick. I think that's going to turn a lot of people on, especially our fat social learn.
Well, no, but I think it's just a totally different. It's a totally different proposition.
Well, it is,
in that it's a place for people to come and to learn.
Just one thing on this is, the other thing is, I've not followed quite closely the work of the Don's Local Action Group and where they're kind of developing, and they do a lot on stuff on digital poverty.
Yeah,
and
it's all that. It's all that. It's all
that. Exactly that. So it's actually in terms of the ethos of what the club is trying to do to become a community hub and become that kind of point of saying, well, actually, you know, we strongly support the people in our local boroughs and our local communities. That is a really good way of saying that's exactly what we're about. I like that. I also like the idea, you know, I've seen at other football clubs where they have health centres at the football club. You know, it's, you know, I know Blackpool had a massive health centre part of their ground, and it's that sort of thing is the kind of thing that makes people think, well, this is, it's part of the whole infrastructure and kind of social infrastructure of the local area. And I think that's what's really important. So I quite like your idea of a library, Matt.
Yeah, well, also
Sainsbury's or something instead, but like, you know.
Yeah, I really hope not. Right, I just want to run through some other points quickly, because Niall's been at the House of Lords today, and he's got an update on the football governance thing, which, you know, it's going to be interesting to hear.
Stimulating, I'm sure.
Yeah. But you know, so there's talk of concerts on the pitch if our pitch can hold it, because obviously, you know, we had the issue with the water storage under the pitch. So if our pitch can hold concerts, that could be a good thing. I was interested in the fact that Craig Cope was talking that there's an app out there at the moment which assesses every player in the league under 24, and it seems to be across Europe as well. So there's this amazing sort of app that people are using.
On that point, I mean, Foyo, we haven't really seen much of.
Yeah,
the little bit we all saw, we were all quite happy and excited about, but then he's disappeared without a trace ever since, and is struggling even to get in the match day squad. Ahead of he's behind Piggott in the pecking order. Although, if rumours are to be believed, then Piggott has to be in the squad if he's available. But the reality is, what Peter Boyle used to do and made a lot of money through and had done for many, many years is finding that rough diamond in non-league or in Palace reserves or in Charlton reserves or whatever else, and picking them up for a song. We obviously find Foyo from Ipswich reserves and Bryman League in Essex, and we're able to bring in a London boy and keep him in London, or bring him back to London rather, which will hopefully pay off rather well in terms of him progressing through. Like him to have an opportunity, even if it's a, you know, Adi Aziz last 15 minutes style. Let's not play negatively, but again, that probably comes down to something we haven't touched on yet, which is our manager's particular, dare I say, dislike of bringing a substitute on before about the 73rd minute.
And listen, if a sub comes on before the 70th minute, I can only imagine they're injured, because never ever before, like Adam with his head in his hands.
Oh, it just does my head in, the late subs.
I know. And we know that because we sit in front of you. So just some other things from the thing. There's going to be a new catering contract. We're very excited about this because I think the existing deal has not been great. And also that will take into account energy bills as well, because energy prices have gone up, and that wasn't taken into account with the last contract. So we've had to foot a lot of those bills, and energy prices have obviously gone up, inflation's gone up. The third floor, again, you know, the idea that you could kit that out is going to cost a fortune, but it could be where our new offices are, and it could be that they rent out the existing offices on the ground floor somewhere, and our offices could be up on the third floor. Looking at some really interesting projects, but one of the things that might be more feasible is the training ground. So it looks like Merton are very keen on us doing something with the training ground. So that looks like out of the major capital projects, that could be one in the not hugely distant future. There is also talk about the idea, because we actually own a lot of the ground and the surrounding ground of the pitch. So talk of potentially hotels or flats in the corners of the ground with a stand underneath. So that would be like, you know, you'd have the hotel, but they would have to pay for the stand as well. So that's something that's been, but that is, seems to be, that would be a way off, like 5 to 10 years away. So those seem to be like the big things that were talked about last night. We're heading in the right direction. Obviously, money is going to be a big issue for us. And I'm pretty sure at some point we're going to return to that 50 plus one debate. unless we can make an amazing sale, like an amazing sale, or someone wins the lottery and gives their money over. It was also interesting.
Amazing sales, though. I also understand the information that one of the things Mick Buckley mentioned was that the budgeting for next season is being done on the basis of not selling any player.
Yes.
Which, again, I think is fascinating in two ways. Number one, because we've always done that the last 3 or 4 years, and we're still reaping the rewards of the sell-on clauses of the likes of Ali and Jake Madoni, for example. But number two, there is no one right now, the likes of Morgan Williams and Aaron Tass, who haven't kicked on in perhaps the way that we thought they could or would. And so there's no one obvious right now that we could sell on for a particularly significant sum.
No, I was just going to say, I'm going to say one silly thing and then one useful thing. I think the silly thing is, I think at the bottom of these hotels that we plan to build should clearly be another pub so that we meet the requirements of having a pub on all four corners. Pretty sure that's in some sort of manifesto that we need to fix, get somewhere. Yeah, somewhere. And then, but the other thing to say that I picked up from the meeting yesterday, which I thought was super important, even though I have complained about the concession stuff behind our area a number of times, was that they said that at the beginning of this season, the PLC board made a concerted effort to get every person that works, back staff, front staff, players, together to talk about what it means to be Wimbledon, and had the players and the people that are running the different, you know, areas, etc., to understand what that meant, and that everyone would play a part in getting Wimbledon to the potential of promotion this season. And I really thought that was a piece of excellent manoeuvre. I don't know how that was arranged or how they got there, but it totally makes sense. I've talked about the fact that at our ground, when you talk to people who are serving you the beers, giving the drinks and whatever, and they are behind what is happening for the 90 minutes of the game, it makes a big difference.
I don't want to piss on Adam's chips. What? But
that sounds really
honestly, they're the only chips he can buy, to be honest with you. There's not many chips available that he can actually buy.
Most of them are coating like goose fat, so they're the best chips.
Meeting that Adam talked about, I don't believe anyone from Elior was involved.
I don't know who was involved, but
I can tell you who was involved, and it is significant that it happened, and it is important that it happened, and it happened either very early season or pre-season anyway. And what it involved was all the members of the playing staff, including obviously, you know, your under-18s and so on, and all the full playing staff and the coaching staff and all of the staff at the club. So your facilities managers and your HR managers and your media people like Chris Thorpe and Chris Lavin and so on that people are aware of. And obviously the club management with Jackson and Dave Reddington and Terry Skiverton and Craig Cope, and they all came together in that particular regard. And I definitely think, so especially as there's always a turnover with playing staff at League 2, League 1 and League 2 level, that was very important and significant. And that seems to have definitely made an impact in terms of the feeling of togetherness. I don't know that the Elior people were involved, as we said. Having said that, it does look like the ill-fated albatross around our neck that has been Elior for the last however many years Joe Palmer signed us up for, thank you very much, Silent Joe, is now on its way out. Yep. Having said that, even if it is on its way out, they're well aware, I think, that they have re-tendered, and Adam can also confirm this or deny this, but I would say their engagement and their friendliness and their understanding of the fact that we are actually human beings, not just cattle that they should be looking after, so to speak, has been much improved this season. And they even actually occasionally get some hot pies at halftime, not just the vegetarian ones.
Yeah, no, okay. Yeah, I don't know who was at the meeting, but I thought the whole premise of what it was about made a load of sense. And I obviously only buy my chips from Naked Chips because of the van that pulls up. I do avoid the concession, but I would say that when I have got a beer at halftime from some of the bits around there, that those people who are probably, yeah, employed by not us, have been nicer and less, yes, less cattle market towards us. But let's see if they change the score, and I'm going to go and test it. When they change it, I'll go and wander around and try the new concessions things and see whether I feel they are buying into it or whether they're just there to make some money.
Did anyone go to the new catering, not catering, the new merchandise outlet that they've got by the turnstile?
I saw it. I didn't go. I didn't use it. I mean, like, it's there and it was popular. There were queues for it. Not as big a queues as there were for my pie. And for whatever reason, the my pie queues now seem to be ridiculous. You've got to get there early to get your pies in. But it's great. I think it's brilliant that it's there, the merchandise store. I think it's fantastic. I was thinking it might have been on the concourse by the concessions, but obviously it makes sense that it's where it is because then everyone on the ground can access it.
And it does spread the activity around. It does hopefully take a little bit of the stress off the club shop. And as long as the Wi-Fi stuff works around the stadium, which is another issue in itself, I'd say playing well done to Matt and all the volunteers.
Yeah, so, okay. Yeah, thanks. Yeah. There's last few things on that. Firstly, the meet the PLC board, like the whole presentation and the Wi-Fi. Okay, there's a bit of a blip at the beginning, but in terms of the audio, the video, it was fantastic. They set up a really nice stall. They had the branding at the back. I think there's loads of stuff that's working. I have to say, I thought that meet the PLC was actually an excellent meeting in terms of that. And then the other thing they said was they've renegotiated a kit deal, and we will obviously have new kits. But they didn't say who the renegotiation was with. So it's like, obviously Umbro currently is our kit manufacturer, and it sounds like we're going to get some cool kits. So before we move into the final bit, well, Niall will tell us how football will be saved, because I think I would like to hear that. Who do we think our kit manufacturer will change? And if so, which kit manufacturer would you really like? Bearing in mind, I have done no Googling on ethical kit manufacturers, although we did have the Eco 7 kit previously, which I would obviously go for, because fast fashion, etc., is a big problem. But anyway, other than that, who do we think might be our, if we change, might be our next kit sponsor? Manufacturer, sorry.
The manufacturer will be the one that gives us the most free kit. And I don't think, unfortunately, it'll be anything different to that. No. I say that very matter-of-factly, because I did see, and I don't have any of the information, so you can't have any exclusives because I've forgotten it already. But this was obviously up for tender, and the information was bouncing around and was something that Don's Trust Board were privy to at the end of last year before I stepped down. And basically, the information that they put out to different kit manufacturers was, you know, how much is the deal going to cost? How many years you're going to put it over? How much free kit you're going to give us? What's the minimum order we have to place with you? And so on and so forth. And it was weighing all those things up together. And in simple terms, we obviously need kit for the ladies. We need kit for the juniors. We need kit for all the different age groups. And we also need multiple kits and training kits and so on, as well as all the kits that we sell. We should not replicate kits. They're exactly the same kits as well. And naturally enough, we purchase all the different things, and if someone's able to give us, for sake of argument, and I don't know the numbers, for £200,000 worth of free kit, and someone else is going to give us £75,000 worth of free kit, then I'm afraid, Adam, any kind of ethical whatever is going to go straight out the window, and that's just hard-nosed business. And I wish that wasn't the case, but however the club dress it up, that will be... They won't say that in the press release. We've gone with Adidas because, you know, because of this. And I'm sure the designs will be great, because Jonesy will be doing them again, and he's come up with some cracking designs.
I think what we're getting to is that Adam has a preferred kit manufacturer. That's where you're at. That's where we're going to. And it's not Umbro, is it? Who's your preferred? You want? I can't remember who you're looking for. Who's your preferred?
I like the Hummel kits. Yeah,
but they're bankrupt. That's bankrupt. They're not active anymore. Okay. You have to move away from them.
Just to pick up on Adam's point, is that actually the choice of the Hummel kit was partially ethical based, because at the time Hummel actually did have some really good ethical policies, and that was one of the considerations that when I was on the board we were aware of being one of the reasons we went with Hummel.
But what they didn't have was any financial management, which went against them, I guess, was the downside
it
of that.
It did. But that was one of the reasons we switched to Hummel, was for the reasons that they were more ethical than the alternative that we had at that time.
I mean, okay, so no one has answered my question, which is which kit manufacturer do you want? I would be quite happy.
Adidas. Okay.
Mark says Adidas. I'd be quite happy for Umbro to continue, because I think their shirts, and also the design that Mark Jones does, which I think is fantastic, always have, but they are really nice shirts, and they fit well and they're nice, etc. So I'd be happy to stick with Umbro.
Yeah. I'm much like this is a sort of conversation that people have with cars, you know, like the favorite cars that people have. Like, honestly, it's like I like a red one or a blue one. That's fine by me. I don't genuinely care. I mean, like, as long as it's a nice design, I really don't care who manufactures our kit.
Yeah, I'm pretty much with you, Matt, with the one exception, as long as they're not produced by Nazis, then yeah. That's basically where yeah. I'm at.
Exactly. So that's it, a non-Nazi policy.
But also remember, some of the
you can put that on your manifesto, Adam.
Yeah. Right?
We're anti-Nazis.
But also remember, some of the early kits we had were like wearing like flannel shirts.
Yeah, but I mean, as long as it's a decent material and it's well designed, then that's all right. That's what I'm looking for. I don't care who flipping manufactures it.
Not sweatshops.
Yeah, there you are.
Okay. Mark goes Adidas, I go Umbro.
I go no sweatshops and no Nazis.
Yeah. I mean,
well,
yeah, that's
unfortunately,
right.
No sweatshops, you're going to rule out probably every mass manufacturer
everyone
of leisure wear in the Western world.
Oh, dear yeah. me. Anyhow, it's amazing. This is going to be our longest podcast for a long time. This is what happens when we don't have a game.
No, it's not.
Because I'm just rambling. Out.
Yeah, and that's not.
Here's an interesting thing.
Yeah.
I'm going to make football for a minute.
Okay, good luck.
I know. Good luck with that. We're at the point in the season where I'm genuinely looking at other people's results.
Oh yeah, and I'm watching. Whilst we're doing the pod, I've got the League Two live scores up.
We've all got
the League Two live scores up. So
we're not going to be able to record to the end of the.
We've all got them up. So at the moment, and this is what are we on? About 70 minutes. So this is the time JJ might consider making a sub. We've got Bromley nil, Bradford nil. How do we want that one to go, guys? Because we're playing Bromley next.
The
situation is Bradford, by even getting a draw, have pushed us out of the automatics. So want Bromley to win and get about three players sent off in the last 5 minutes.
Okay.
And it's just want a big. I'm not unhappy with nil nil. Lots of sendings off and maybe a couple of serious injuries. Probably where I'd go with that game.
Cheltenham nil, Walsall one. I guess we want, because we're still thinking we can win the league, yeah? Do we still think we can?
I kind of want Walsall
maybe
to be
actually,
dragged back in.
So the Volunteers away day this season is going to be at Walsall. And the last time, many, many, many years ago, that we had a Volunteers away day at Walsall away was the day that we were both really, really poor and we were 2-0 down at half time and we came back and a listener or two may remember we scraped through with a 3-2 win with Dean Powell putting a penalty in the top corner in front of the away fans.
It's
the last time, and it's about 12 years ago, that we've actually won on the Volunteers away day. Yeah. So if Walsall winning tonight means that they're going to be on the beach by the time we play them in about 6 weeks' time, I'm all for that.
Only one shot on target, though, Mark, Walsall.
Doesn't
and that
matter.
Wasn't the first
they need... One shot on target, one goal.
Listen, someone wise said to me earlier on, you can win a match 1-0, and that's it.
Thank you, Brian Clough. Look, a Tranmere right now would absolutely hack your arm off for one shot on target.
Yeah.
They're 1-0 down at home in a relegation six-pointer?
So a Fleetwood starting to fly.
Tranmere have had two shots on target, by the way, Mark, just out of interest at this moment in time.
So Fleetwood have beaten Gillingham.
Fleetwood are not flying.
Fleetwood have beaten Gillingham. So where are Fleetwood in the league? I can't got the
table. Oh, they're all mid-table.
They're 11.
Yeah, and Tranmere nil, Accrington one. So it's really the top two, the Bromley Bradford and Cheltenham Walsall. So we could do with I think we could do a Cheltenham.
We could do Bradford losing, really.
Bradford losing,
and Cheltenham keep picking up a point at least would be quite good. Anyhow, I just want to get into Niall. You had a trip up to the House of Lords today. In actual fact, I met Niall on the bus on the way back, and it didn't sound great. It's where are we up to? What's happening with the Football Governance Bill? How are we saving football?
We're saving football probably by trying to ban Tory peers from ever speaking, I think, is the solution.
Sounds like a good plan to me.
So if we can do that, that will be the solution. The problem we've got is that they are filibustering and it's delaying, but they're doing it across all sort of bills, which means lots and lots of legislation is being delayed, which means that the key changes we want to see in the Football Governance Bill have not been pushed forward because Labour are just saying we just need to get stuff through, rather than, so they're going for good rather than best across every bit of legislation because of the delays caused by the Tories. So if we're going to be really brutally honest at the moment, we're battling to get the last couple of changes we really want because the Tories are delaying everything, which is driving me nuts. So that's what's basically happening. So it's really horrible.
And you were saying something about there's a word.
All right. So basically the difference that we want, right, it's really the financial situation in football is the key. And it's all about the broadcast deal, the distribution of that broadcast deal, which is worth £3.2 billion a year. Now, there's going to be a state of the game report that will conclude what all the problems are in the game. It's quite a comprehensive report that's going to come out. And at the moment, the implication is that a broadcast deal would have to refer in some way to answering some of the problems that state of the game report highlights. But there is no definite need for them to do that. And when you talk about the power of the Premier League or the EFL, right, they don't necessarily have to abide by that particular element. And what we're calling for, and this is taken a long time to get to some sort of like concession on this, is if it's made explicit. So basically the distribution deal must address the problems identified in football. That's where it becomes significantly different, because what the people who've studied it will tell you that there is a big financial gap between the divisions, and that to solve football's problems, you need to close the gaps between the divisions. And that means a significant financial redistribution down the leagues. That's what needs to happen. And that's the difference between implicit, which Premier League can quite happily ignore, or explicit, which means it actually has to do with that. So we are talking, as Matt says, one word that changes the entire future of football.
And there you are, Chad. I hope you've all got that. And are there any questions, Adam? Did you have a question?
So I think everyone on this podcast agrees with the principles of what Fair Game and hopefully the Football Governance Bill would do. And I understand there's a delaying tactic that is currently happening in this filibustering or whatever the heck it is. So my question is, like, if we want to see change for the next football season, when are we going to run out of time for these things to have been debated, etc.? Because if people are delaying things for whatever reasons they want to delay stuff, are they just pushing that back and back and back so that it will be another season before things? So when would we need to see some legislation in place? I don't know if that's the right word, to make changes for the next football season.
Irrespective of what happens in terms of this delaying process, I would be very optimistic that there will be a Football Governance Bill, an act, by June. The regulator, there's a shadow regulator already in place. So I think we will see in a few weeks the appointment of a chair and a chief executive of the regulator. And the regulator will be starting to impact football for the start of the next season. That will happen. The difference that we're talking about here is what the remit of the regulator can be. So the more the Tories talk and delay things, the less likely we are to get a bill that's fit for, that's, you know, fully fit for purpose, because they're talking out the key changes that we'd want to happen. Remember, this is largely a Tory bill, so we're talking about changes that the Labour Party might be interested in doing that actually make it, to be honest, better for us as a football club. And that's what the Tories are currently talking out. And that's the frustration that you're seeing, because we're running out of time. Labour will get it through and it will go through by June. What we want is to see it improved rather than Labour going, oh, just fuck it and just go, right, we'll just get it through, whatever.
The problem being, if they just forget the party allegiance stuff, if it's just pushed through to be able to be pushed through and watered down appropriately, then is it already, and I genuinely don't mean to be negative about it, but is it already doomed before it starts?
It's not going to be. Look, if you'd have asked me to take the bill as it stands 4 years ago, I'd have said yes, and I'd probably bitten your hand off, right? Because there's a lot in it that's good. The point that we've got is that we're in a situation where we could get something that's really fixes a lot of the fundamental problems in football, and we are talking one word, and that's the difference.
And there you have it. I think we are implicitly, explicitly coming to the end of the podcast.
Quick score update.
Quick score update. It's the same scores. Bromley nil, Bradford nil, 50 minutes to go. Cheltenham nil, Walsall one, Connor Cheltenham. The other scores
Which
just
leaves us
don't matter.
fourth, and it also, in terms of looking at other people's scores, genuinely is a situation now where Bromley play Bradford. If they manage to hold Bradford to a draw, not only do we need to win our home games, based on what we talked about before with regards to the draws away, but if we manage to get 3 points off Bromley, whereas Bradford only get one, that actually could make all the difference in the final analysis.
I like the fact that we're doing live football scores for something that will not come out for at least another 24 hours, based on the fact I've got to make some edits.
Come on, producer Adam. Work harder.
Adam, come on, like, you can leave that lasagna for another day.
Adam, you need to get it out before full time, surely. Otherwise, we'll look really out of date. You've got 15 minutes,
listen,
14
there is
minutes now,
we're out of date
13
is how we
minutes at
are.
Cheltenham.
And listen, if anyone is confused about what filibustering is, that's what this
Watch the
podcast has
West
been.
Wing.
That's what this
That'll explain
pod.
to you what the filibustering is.
I think this podcast is a prime example of what filibustering is, to be honest with you. Oh, dear me. Oh, I'd just like to say thank you very much, my friend Al Cooper, Adam, producer Adam, and football expert Mark Lewis.
Thank
I've
you,
been
man.
Matt Cooper. We are the same on Wobbles. We're back always.